Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyard, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. You can feel free to call in to chat about the news, an issue in the Bible that you're wrestling with, a relational issue, or some debate on evolution versus creation, the age of the earth. Those are the kinds of issues we talk about here at Bob Benyard Live. I got an article sent to me from a listener in Greenville, North Carolina, from the Greenville Journal, and it's actually a column by Dr. James Dobson with Focus on the Family, an excellent article answering the question, why do you think kids are more sexually active today than when I was young? What is causing this generation to be so promiscuous? And he has a couple excellent answers in there. We'll get to that. And first, there's an interesting little tidbit in the news about the tallest living thing being a redwood tree in Northern California. And they have found that it is 378 feet tall. Obviously, that's huge, right? My family, we like to take our vacations, go to national parks once a year. And we've been to Sequoia and Yosemite. And I've seen the redwoods in Northern California on the coast and in Oregon. And in fact, in Washington State, Olympia National Park, there are these wonderfully, beautifully huge, massive trees. And so this year, redwood, 378 feet tall. Now, that's got to be taller than General Sherman, right? General Sherman, where is that in Sequoia National Park in California? That's the largest tree. It's massive, but it's not as tall as this, 378 feet. Now, I bring this up to put it in perspective. Back when God first created the earth was filled with life. After the first 6 days, when God created Adam and Eve, and he put them in the garden, Adam and Eve, the species that we call Homo sapien, human beings, God only created two human beings, Adam and Eve. But other species, he filled the earth with them. For example, the seas were undoubtedly teeming with life. And God created forests over the whole earth. So if he made apple trees, he wouldn't have made one apple tree. He would have made millions of apple trees. And the same thing with all kinds of birds and fish and animals. So the earth was filled with life, and the Garden of Eden God planted. And we could tell by reading the Bible so much about the Garden of Eden. But in the center of the garden, water came gushing up from under the ground, and that water flowed out of the garden. And the garden only had one easy way in, to the east. And once God didn't want anyone to get into the Garden of Eden to eat from the tree of life, then he put cherubim there to guard the way to the tree of life at that entrance. So the Garden of Eden was like a hidden paradise, probably cliff walls around it, and a raging river, massive river that ran around the entire Garden of Eden. Here's what happened. The water came up from the center of the garden, and it watered the garden, and there were two trees in the center of the garden, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God said you could eat from the tree of life, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you cannot eat. Now, by the way, that tree is a symbol for the law. That's what the knowledge of good and evil is. It's the law. The law is the knowledge of good and evil. And we have two ways to live righteously. One way is to be righteous because you are righteous like God, or God's righteousness is flowing through you. And the other way, which doesn't work well, is to be righteous because you're attempting to follow a set of rules. That way doesn't work well. And so the tree of the knowledge of good and evil represented, if people partook of that tree, then they would lose their inherent innocence and righteousness, and then they would be stuck with trying to keep a set of rules, which for the most part would be a failure. And so God named that tree the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And in the Bible, we see where the Bible uses that phrase as a synonym for the law. The law is the knowledge of good and evil. So anyway, once Adam and Eve sinned, God kicked them out of the garden and told them they couldn't go back in because then they could eat from the tree of life. And we have a Bible study seminar on this topic. It's really fun. It's called The Tree, Whatever Happened to the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil. But the Bible describes that tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, growing in the midst of the garden. And it had this massive quantity of water that fed its roots. And that water flowed out of the Garden of Eden. And when it left the garden, it split and it ran around both sides of the Garden of Eden. And it broke into four rivers, four massive rivers that watered the whole earth. Originally, there was only one continent. And Pangaea, geologists call it Pangaea. And the Bible refers to this one landmass. And then there was the sea or the ocean. And so we read in the Bible that this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, it grew so massive. Now, when God planted it, undoubtedly it was an extraordinary tree. He didn't plant seeds in the Garden of Eden. He planted trees and vegetables, fruit trees, and bushes. It must have been beautiful. It must have blew away Bouchard Gardens on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. Just the thought of what the Garden of Eden must have looked like is somewhat overwhelming. And he planted the trees full grown, just like he created Adam and Eve, not as babies. He didn't create them as infants, but he created them as adults in perfect health and mature. And so, too, that's how he created our solar system and our galaxy and the universe as functional. He didn't create it and then wait billions of years for it to start functioning. He created it to accomplish the purpose he had for it. Okay, well, the Bible tells us that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was so massive. God created it as a mature tree, fully functional. There it was. It had fruit growing on it. And then it grew with this enormous water source right at its base for how long? How long, approximately, did the tree of the knowledge of good and evil grow until it was destroyed? How long? And then what happened to it? Whatever happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Well, the Bible tells the story. It's rather extraordinary. It's one of the Bible stories. You know, we're all familiar with the typical Bible stories, right? David and Goliath and Noah's flood. It's typical stories you learn about in Sunday school. But the story that the Bible tells of whatever happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that's one of those pretty much overlooked, fascinating Bible studies. And there's a full chapter on it in the Bible. I'm not going to tell you where it is. You have to find it, search for it. And if you find it on your own, you'll love it all the more. But the Bible describes that tree, and it says that the greatest trees of the field, the largest trees, were like branches to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So imagine picking out, taking the sequoias, taking this redwood here that is 378 feet long, and pulling it out, pull it up from the ground, pull out its roots, and stick it on the side of a much greater, enormous tree, and that would just be one of its branches. That's a big tree. Big tree. And what would bring a tree like that down? Well, the story's in there. The story's in the Bible. It is absolutely fascinating. I write about it in the plot manuscript, and we have a whole seminar we do on it. It's called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Whatever happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? What was its fate? What is its legacy? So interesting. Okay, so good for these guys in California figuring out they found. Now, this tree is 8 feet taller than the previous record holder. So the previous record holder, about 370 feet. This one, 378 feet. They don't want to tell anybody where it is because they're afraid the area will get overrun and maybe harm the tree. So researchers now are climbing the tree to make a more accurate measurement. I wouldn't think they'd have to do that, climb it. I think it'd be harder to measure it climbing it than just measuring it. They said they're going to drop a tape measure down. How in the world do you accurately measure the height of a tree by dropping a tape measure down? That's weird. There are branches below you and the trunk, and because they say it's 378.1 feet. So pretty absolutely fascinating. The world that God created for us is so extraordinary when you think that every cell in a tree, its leaves, its seeds, pine cones, whatever, however it reproduces itself, every seed has the DNA, the complete, fabulously complex instructions for how to build another tree. That's fascinating. All the ways that God designed for plants and trees to disperse their seeds so that you have new plants, new trees, bushes growing, and not just at the base of the existing tree or plant, but far away, and all those different mechanisms. Some seeds are real sticky, and an animal walks by or a person, and they stick to you, and you walk, and a half a mile away, you brush it off, and there's a new plant growing up. Others, they're so light, the breeze blows, and they float in the air miles. Other seeds, they fall off, and they explode. They literally explode and scatter their seeds. Some seeds are like helicopters. They fall off a tree and they start spinning in the wind. And that helicopter action pulls them away from the tree. It's so neat to see how awesome God is in the creation. Okay, now, this article. Oh, before I get to James Dobson's article on why kids are more sexually active today than years ago, our telethon. We're at 27% of our telethon goal, and we truly need your help to help Bob and Yurt Live stay on the internet for another year. We are planning on rolling out a complete redesign of KGOV, a brand new website on Monday, kgov.com, and we really could use your help. It would be tremendous. Some people, you know, give $25, others $50 or $100. Some people make a pledge of $50 or $100 a month. Some people have come through with $1,000 or $2,000 gifts, which are extraordinary. And we could really use your help. It's the middle of the week. It's the end of summer. Summers are difficult for ministries and programs like Bob and Yurt Live, and we really do need your help to hit the new year running and to try to keep Bob and Yurt Live on the internet at kgov.com for yet another year. So you can call us or go to our website, kgov, kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-NYART. That's 800-836-9278. Now, this article that Dr. Dobson has written, and of course it goes out to publications all around the world, just like their radio show, is in, what, dozens of countries on thousands of stations. And this year, excellent question, why are kids more sexually active today than years ago? What is causing this generation to be so promiscuous? And the answer from Dr. Dobson is there are many factors, and of course there are, He says, not least of which is the trash that is beamed to teenagers on television, in movies, and from the rock music industry. That's all true. At the Enyart family, our kids do not watch network TV. We don't watch network TV unless it's something special, a football game, perhaps, or we did watch that 9/11 special. My wife Cheryl and I watched that this past week. That was extraordinary on ABC. But we'll go months, 6 months, a year, and not turn on the broadcast networks. Now, we tend to watch, animal shows, they're all liberal, but not the more liberal ones, and news and History Channel and things like that. And our kids, we go out of our way to get our kids plenty of entertainment so that, believe me, they're not starved for well-produced movies and shows and cartoons and sitcoms, but we get them from the 50s and 60s or Christian publications. Our kids have just listened to Jonathan Park, The Tremendous Adventures of the Creationist Families, and their teenage son, Jonathan Park, just a great, great audio series from Vision Forum. And so our kids, they're not exposed to this filth. Of course, they'll get it here and there some way. They'll get it at the grocery store from the magazines. Now, we still, to this day, if I'm in a store and they have some lewd cover and it's facing everybody in the store, a magazine cover, I'll take a Better Home and Gardens from the bottom shelf and just put it in front of the filthy magazine. And who knows how long it'll stay there, hopefully a while. And the same thing, in fact, we went into a McDonald's this past week. I asked to talk to the manager because, you know, they're now selling DVDs. And there was a vulgar cover of a video, some National Lampoon movie, and it was gross. And so I let the manager know that we were extremely disappointed in McDonald's, that 10 years ago, the manager of that store wouldn't have even allowed that to be shown. And today, it's just sitting out there, so we asked them to take it down, and we'll find out what happens with that. So anyway, yeah, kids all over our country and increasingly around the world are being inundated. Their minds are being flooded with filth from Hollywood, movies, and from their music, and of course the internet, right? They're being bombarded by immoral entertainment, as James Dobson put it. And it's our job to protect our kids from that. That's our job while they are our kids under our roof and while they are still our complete responsibility. As they become adults, they go out, they're training for a career, they want to be an architect, they're going to college, they're married, then their first line of defense is themselves. But when they're in your home, you're their first line of defense. So that's right, Dr. Dobson, that stuff is utterly deadly. And then we have, he goes on to another reason that kids are so promiscuous. And he cites two recent studies, the Oregon Social Learning Center. Researchers there found that parental divorce plays a direct role in fostering sexual experimentation among adolescents. You follow that? When the parents are divorced, then the kids become more vulnerable. Of course, that's true. These investigators tracked the behavior of 200 junior high and high school boys who lived in higher crime areas. So these are kids already at risk, right? They live in bad neighborhoods, high crime areas. And they found that the boys who lost their virginity at an early age tended to be those whose parents had two or more divorces or repartnerings. Okay. Wow, what city is that? Do we know? We just got toward our telethon $250 from Littleton, Colorado. And if anyone else, now that's from a Brett. We're not giving Brett's last name. But if anyone else will donate another $250, he'll match it. But what, during this show? Ah, during the show. Boy, Brett, you're rough. I mean, you're good, but it's rough. Okay. So I'm going to take a call, and we'll go to Little Rock, Arkansas. But please, somebody out there, we have. What does that mean? That means there's $500 on the line here, because Brett will match $250 if it comes in during the show. He's given $250. There'll be another $250 if someone else gives $250. All right, that's the way to twist our arms, Brett. So thank you very much. Let's go to the phones. Little Rock, Arkansas. Robbie, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, sir, Bob. Thanks for taking the call. I had a question. My wife and I were having our first child, and I was reading some stuff on the Internet today about vaccinations. I come across something that was very disturbing that I hadn't heard before, and that is that the abortion industry of their role in the vaccines as far as aborted fetal tissue.
Yeah, fetal tissue being used in vaccinations.
Right.
Yes, that's been happening for a long time. It's a devastating problem. It's a part of our wicked culture.
Right. So should we take a moral stance and say we would not use this? Or what should our role as a Christian be in that as far as pro-life?
Well, I know many, many, many people have done that and are doing that. I haven't urged people to do that, and perhaps I should, but that's been the response of many, many people because of this reality. And here's what happens. As our culture becomes increasingly immoral, right? People say, oh, I don't want to shop at Walmart. Right. I don't want to shop at Kmart because they promoted pornography for many years, fighting to do it. I don't want to shop at Walmart because they sell Plan B, the day after pill, the abortifacient Plan B.
Right.
That stops implantation of a fertilized egg.
Right.
And I don't want to, and on and on, pretty much you list every major corporation.
Right. So what choice do you have?
So it's very, very difficult.
Right.
And the Bible says, look, we're not of the world, but we are in the world, and we can't go out of the world. And the Roman Empire was brutally wicked and evil, murderous, and yet God said through his word in the New Testament that generally you should obey the governing authorities and even pay your taxes. So it's a very difficult world that we live in, and many people have decided not to vaccinate their kids. And you know what? The people who are vaccinating their kids are sort of making it easier for the people who don't, because it's less likely those kids will get those problems.
Right.
On the other hand, let's say chickenpox.
Right.
Chickenpox, now a lot of kids don't get it, and then they get it when they're adults, and that really is a problem.
Right.
It almost used to be better when all kids got it when they were young.
Well, I got it.
But I don't know. Young. I'm not an expert on these issues.
Right. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie. Yeah. I appreciate your call. 1-800-8-N-YARDS. 1-800-836-9278. Now, I want to go back to this article, but my call screener has put this big note right in my face here. Brett, $250 matching gift offer from Littleton, Colorado. Thank you, Brett. That's toward our telethon. Boy, that would be a major, major step toward our goal of $15,000. That'd be $750 during this show. Wow, so if there's anybody out there that can match Brett's gift, please let us know. Okay, so Dr. Dobson points out this study from Oregon that, hey, there's a very high percentage of kids whose family breaks up who end up becoming promiscuous. Only 18% of the promiscuous boys in these high crime areas came from intact families. But on the other hand, 57% of the virgins came from homes where divorce had not occurred. On average, the boys who were abstinent had experienced less than one parental transition per kid. $250 came in from California. What city in California? All right, we're going to let you know, just so everything is verifiable. You know, Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. Wow. That's pretty neat. Thank you, guys. What listeners we have. And then the University of Wisconsin, a study of 2,400 white women and 1,200 black women, found a strong correlation between those who bore babies out of wedlock and those who had been through a change in family structure, that the stress of divorce and remarriage on children are directly implicated in out-of-wedlock childbearing. Of course, that's true, right? That's true. Families are the foundation. All right, we've got from California, from Colorado, not California. Both? Two? Oh, my. That's astounding. From California and Colorado. All right, Brett, you did it. I think because of you, we brought in $1,000 toward our goal. Thank you, Brett. We're really on a roll here. I hate to end the Denver portion of the show, but I'm going to have to go. Our airtime's up. The second half of the show will be airing in Iowa. Iowans, stay tuned. We'll have a great time. And call us for the telethon if you'd like to help out. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We'll be back right after this.
My name is Tom Healy. I'm 70 years old, retired federal law enforcement from Texas. When I became a Christian, I, like most Christians, was dropped into the details of the Bible, and I was confused. About 7 years ago, I tuned in about show. He caught my interest, so I tuned in again and again. This guy made sense, and he was espousing wisdom that I knew in my heart was right. And it agreed with Scripture, many times to my surprise. Bob had authored a Bible study called The Plot, an overview of the Bible, which was mentioned quite often on the show. Clergy would call and say, I've been a minister for 20 years, and after reading The Plot, I now understand the Bible. This got my attention as I had read the Bible until I was cross-eyed. After the third clergyman called, I ordered The Plot. Hey, it had a money-back guarantee. When I finished reading it, I wanted to dance on my kitchen table. Hallelujah, God's word is now clear. To order, call 1-800-8-NYART, that's E-N-Y-A-R-T, or 1-800-836-9278, that's 1-800-836-9278, or go online at kgov.com, that's kgov.com. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Bob and Yart Live. Bob and Yart Live at 800-8-NYART. That's our phone number. You could call into the show, or you can go to our website, kgov.com, either way, to enjoy our materials and then also to help us stay on the internet for another year. By the way, one of the things we just posted to our website is in response to the TV evangelist and some other Christians who have adopted a false teaching, a very destructive false teaching, that Jews can, and they view this as a pro-Jewish position, and it's actually completely destructive to the Jews, who we should love, of course, as Abraham's descendants and as our fellow human beings. Christian televangelists have adopted a false doctrine that Jews can reject Jesus Christ and still be saved by his blood, by his sacrifice. And of course, that's completely not true. And what we've done is posted a fascinating, very brief article on that subject, quoting from the Jewish New Testament and also from the Tanakh, the Torah. These are Hebrew translations, or these are Jewish translations of the Old and New Testament into English, and show unequivocally that there is absolutely no way that someone can know of Jesus Christ and reject him as their Savior and find salvation and inherit eternal life. That can't happen. So I'll be getting to that perhaps on tomorrow's show. But right now, I wanted to talk, have you heard about the terrorist attack on our American embassy in Syria, in Damascus? This was an offshoot of an Al-Qaeda, and it's a Syrian group. And what happened was the four attackers are now dead. Three were killed at the scene, and one died of his injuries. Now, no Americans were hurt. Sadly, a Syrian guard was killed in the shooting, and 10 civilians, 10 Syrians, and a Chinese diplomat were injured, but no Americans were hurt. So what's interesting is the name of the group. You know, we've been doing this ongoing observation that we call Son of Ham. You've heard of the murderer, Son of Sam, right? The serial mass murderer, Son of Sam. Well, we call these terrorists Son of Ham, and we point out how over and over these terrorist organizations and terrorist leaders have Ham, H-A-M, in their names. And that's not to say that anybody named Ham is evil. Of course not. But it's just to point out the short history of the world as it marches on because of the descendants of Ham. Remember, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham fathered Canaan, the Canaanites, by incest with his mother, with Noah's wife. And you could read about that also at kgov.com in the Bob's Writings section. And so in the short history of the world, we look at the news out this week about this Al-Qaeda group in Syria called Jund al-Sham, and it's S-H-A-M. And thankfully, no Americans were hurt, but the four terrorists were killed. And then remember Russia's Beslan school terrorist attack, 330 children and adults murdered. That was by Shamil Basayev. He headed up that terrorist attack, Ham, H-A-M, in his name. And of course, we have the Holland Tunnel terrorist who tried to blow up the Holland Tunnel, Assam Hamoud. And then Southeast Asia's Osama is named Hambali. And then in Palestine, well, in the West Bank and Gaza, you have Hamas, H-A-M, and 9/11's Mohammed Atta, and Al-Qaeda's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, H-A-M, and the terrorist sympathizer sniper John Alvin Mohammed, and Mohammed Abu Abbas, and so many others. So many others. The British ringleader of the airline bomb plot was Mohammed Al-Ghandra. And who else? Remember the 1,000 cell phones in Michigan that Adham Othman was arrested? Adham? So Europeans descended from Noah's son, Japheth, Jews and others, Semites, from Shem, and Orientals and others from Ham, Hamitic people. So we're not saying if you have Ham in your name, H-A-M, that you're evil. We're pointing out the short history of the world continues with ethnic and cultural descendants of various Canaanite tribes confirming their Hamitic origins. Now, there's a website. This is a crack up. There's a website about a cockroach, in fact, an abortion clinic cockroach, and it's called abortioncockroach.com, and it's put together by friends of ours. So I want to go right now to Wichita, Kansas. Keith Mason, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob. Great to be back.
Keith, it's so good to hear from you, and you guys are just hysterical. Now, you're with Operation Rescue in Wichita, and tell us what led to this this abortioncockroach.com website.
Well, between you and me, Bob, it's anonymous who set it up, but the reason that abortioncockroach.com was set up is because we have an interesting situation in politics out here in Kansas. We have a governor in place right now that has been bought and paid for by George Tiller, abortionist George Tiller here
right.
in Wichita. And he has given her over $400,000 in order to buy favors from her and keep the abortion industry strong in the state of Kansas. And so, not too long ago, not that I was necessarily in favor of it, but there was a clinic regulation bill that was vetoed by her. And during that, when she vetoed this bill, which would have regulated just basic health concerns with abortion mills in the state of Kansas and would have required them to have like an ambulatory surgical care nearby and deals set up with that.
Yeah,
she vetoed
that,
and she said that all the abortion clinics in the state of Kansas were fine. Words,
yeah, they were all fine.
Needed the care. Yeah.
Right. Now, just to talk about that for a moment, and your governor there's Kathleen Sebelius. Is that how you say her name?
Sebelius, yeah.
Sebelius. Of course, you guys affectionately call her the abortion clinic cockroach queen.
Yes.
But
yes.
As a law, we would never support that law at Bob and Yart Live because it would be like, you know, we're all so... we're so hardened to the killing of unborn children because it happens so much, we sort of lose our perspective and our moral compass. So if they're killing Jews in Germany, that's a way to get beyond our own hardened perspective. If you're killing Jews in Germany, you don't advocate clean rooms before you gas the Jews. It's just we understand the intention, but it backfires morally. So anyway, in Kansas, pro-lifers passed this law, they were attempting to pass this law, saying abortion clinics have to operate with better health standards.
In a sanitary fashion. Yeah, it's still
right.
wrong to kill a child,
right.
an innocent child, in a sanitary place. It's,
right,
it's not
exactly.
It's never okay to kill
exactly.
a innocent child.
And, of course, all health clinics should be sanitary. However, an abortion mill is not a health clinic. It's a place for killing kids. But anyway, this governor, Kathleen Cockroach Queen, she didn't like that law. She was against it. And this abortionist, late-term abortionist, George Tiller, gives her hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so, okay, so we got that. And then, meanwhile, you guys, Operation Rescue, purchases the second abortion clinic in Wichita. Now, the primary clinic is run by late-term abortionist George Tiller.
Right.
But you guys bought the secondary clinic, you bought the building, and then evicted the abortionist. That was brilliant.
Yeah, that was great. I'm actually here at this abortion mill, former abortion mill, right now. I was doing some landscape work here. And so it is disgusting. And that's what we wanted to be told. You know, this governor is up to be reelected here November 7th. Mm. And she has a Republican opponent that is pro-life, he claims. And we were getting a little frustrated because, you know, Kansas is mainly conservative and mainly pro-life, according to some polls that we've done. And the strongest point we felt was the abortion issue. Her weakest point was vetoing this bill, even though it's a bad bill, vetoing a bill because it shows how strongly and how passionate she was about killing children, that she doesn't care what kind of facility they're done in. Mm-hmm. She just wants them to be open and to operate in the state of Kansas. And so, I'm not necessarily a Republican. I don't know if this will offend you, Bob, but I'm not necessarily Republican. And
it doesn't offend
me. In my opinion, if we don't talk about these children being killed, the babies lose. Mm-hmm. And so the Republican opponent was failing to mention the fact that thousands of children in Kansas were being killed every day. And this governor that wants to be reelected does whatever she can and goes out of her way to support that and mm-hmm. takes money from these child killers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so we felt the best way to do that was for a certain group that never really has a voice normally to come up and to unite and to come out and support this governor, this pro-abortion governor. And that's the certain group that she protected. It's it's the roaches, the cockroaches inside these abortion clinics that she was protecting by vetoing that bill. And so abortion clinic cockroaches unite.
Okay. Yeah, abortion clinic cockroaches unite. Go, Kathleen, go. It's a really funny website. There's a number of photographs, not only of cockroaches and cockroach cartoons, but then also of you guys dressed up as cockroaches at the Kansas State Fair with the governor cockroach queen there. And so you buy the abortion clinic, you evict the abortionist, you find cockroaches in the place. In fact, there's a photograph on this website of one of the dead cockroaches next to a penny. Is that from that clinic?
It is, yeah. We nicknamed that cockroach when we first saw it, Kathleen.
Okay. Yeah, that's cockroach Kathleen, much bigger than a penny. And then, so you guys also found out that the clinic is pretty gross, right, as far as unclean and bacteria?
It is foul. I'm actually right at this mill right now. I was doing some yard work here, and it is beyond what I ever imagined to be gross. So I think you had the idea, which was a great idea, Bob, to actually test the bacteria levels inside the clinic or mill.
That is
outside.
That is funny. When you guys, in fact, you broke the story on the show, as I recall, that Operation Rescue purchased this abortion clinic in Wichita, Kansas, and then we were thrilled and then joked about it and said, you know, you should swab the clinic and then go swab the back alley and see if the clinic is safe or if it's just as filthy or worse than the back alley. So you guys actually did that. You swabbed the clinic?
We did. We used some bacteria testing contact plates. And it's interesting to note, Bob, is that this abortion mill was actually a member of good standing in the National Abortion Federation.
Right.
And they have a sticker inside of this mill that says they are in cooperation and they are complying with all of the safety and health standards of the National Abortion Federation.
Right, right.
And so we took these contact plates and we tested different areas in the clinic, and I bet you'll never guess what we found. Would you be able to take a guess of more disgusting?
I bet you the abortuary was filthy. Now, I don't know which parts of it would have been the grossest.
Well, I'll tell you, the grossest part of this, the most bacteria that we found, according to these contact plates that tested this, was actually the countertop. They can view pictures of this on OperationRescue.org. The countertop in which they sterilized their killing instruments, all of the abortion instruments, had far more bacteria than the parking lot did.
Oh.
So it would have been a safer or more cleanly environment to have an abortion in the parking lot right next to the back alley than it would have to have an abortion inside this facility. It's just so foul.
Oh, brother.
I know that probably doesn't come to a surprise to you.
But it is.
All this nonsense about back alley abortions and we're going back. We're already there. They're just chop shops, you know. Women, you know, they keep saying safety for women and all this nonsense. And they're just shoddy murderers that are just in it to make a buck.
Okay, now a number of abortion clinics have been closing down around the country or being shut down. And your website, right on your front page, you report about a number of them. But could you give us an update? What's happening around the country with these abortion clinics? This is quite a rash of closures.
Well, it is exciting, and I think the word is getting out about how disgusting these places are. And they should be closing because they kill children.
Right.
But they are closing, and we've had there's been 12 closures around the country, different parts of the country, since October of last year.
In the last year.
In the last year. So 12 mills. And there's very few left. There's, maybe, I don't know how many, actually. Last statistic I heard was somewhere in the 700s around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But they're diminishing because they just are. They're shoddy and they're foul and they're just in it to make a buck.
And pro-lifers, we do need to change the law to once again protect unborn children, because killing them intentionally is murder. And so we need to clarify that in the law, or at least enforce the law against murder for children. But also, while there's the effort to do that, there also needs to be this effort at the abortion clinics, where Christians go to the clinics and try to intervene and save the babies. Here in Denver at Planned Parenthood, so far this year, 54 babies were saved. Just yesterday, a woman, Joe Scott and Leslie Hanks, talked a mom into saving her baby's life and not killing the baby. And so when the pro-lifers go to these abortion clinics day in and day out, they make it very difficult for the abortion clinic to operate, for the neighborhood to accept the abortion clinic, for the staff members who are going to help kill the kids. Even for the abortionist, it becomes difficult. And then, Keith, here in Denver, we do something that's unheard of. We go to the abortionist home. Now, I know you guys do this in Wichita. We need to have it done in more cities around the country. We go to the abortionist home to protest there so that there will not be child killing with peace, with serenity.
That's right. It should be done. And something also to note, Bob, is that when good people like Ken and Joe Scott out there in Denver and so many other good pro-lifers around the country, when they save a baby from being killed in an abortion mill, they're actually taking money away. These places are businesses. Like
right.
any other business, they need to make money. And they make money by killing these children.
Yeah.
And so if there's a saved baby, that shows a loss of profit for them. And just like any other business, if you lose enough profit, you have to shut down.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That's definitely a factor with all these abortion mills closing around the country.
That is a factor. Now, the 54 babies saved by the pro-lifers at Planned Parenthood in Denver so far this year were a little bit behind where we normally would be to save over 100 babies a year. But so far, what Planned Parenthood has lost is $24,000, the money they would have gotten, $450 a head to kill each of those kids. And, of course, when we save over 100 babies, that's approaching $50,000, which is significant because that's blood money. They have a price tag on these kids' heads. They kill them and they get the money. But that's $50,000 off the top because their expenses don't really go down. So that does hurt them, but it especially hurts these smaller abortion mills. And so in a dozen abortion clinics to close in the last year, this is pretty neat that the pro-lifers are fighting at that level, and then also to try to re-exert the legal protection of unborn children.
That's right. That's right. As you remember, there's an initiative on the ballot in South Dakota to completely ban abortion in the state of South Dakota, and it redeclares, in that state at least, the personhood of the unborn child.
Mm.
It's exciting. We're moving forward. We're gaining some momentum. We're not there yet. Children are still being killed in this country. But I won't stop until it ends. And I know you're on the fight full-time, Bob, the radio show and at the church there.
That's right. And, Keith, you're out in Wichita with your wife, Jennifer, and your family, and then you work with Troy Newman, who heads up the effort there. And right. So if somebody would like to support you guys, you know, we have our telethon going right now, our annual internet telethon every September. And today was a good day, actually. I think we took in $1,250 during the Denver portion of the show. Our goal is $15,000, and we're maybe 35% of the way there or so. But you guys also have to survive financially. And so what would people do if they're interested in finding out more about you and Jennifer, your part of the battle?
Well, if they want to find out more, first I would encourage them to make a donation to you and to KGov to keep you on the air, because it's so important to what you're doing there in Denver and nationwide and worldwide through the web. I really encourage everybody to donate, and I'll try to do what we can as well,
Keith,
your ministry.
But Al Sharon just gave you a thumbs up.
He did.
Yeah,
oh.
He did. He tries to bring in the revenue around here. And so thank you so much.
Well, and so after they contributed to you, of course, we actually just set up a website for our family. We consider ourselves missionaries to America because we're trying to save babies and save the souls of this godless nation here in America. Mm. And so the website, AmericanMissionaries.org, they could read more about our family and what we're doing, and stay updated that way. View pictures, and they could even contribute on that website if they chose.
Wow!
So,
hey, that's some domain name. That's pretty great.
Yeah, it was great. I snagged it, and it was available. So,
yeah, AmericanMissionaries.org, and there you guys right on the homepage. Very good. Okay, so Keith Mason, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it, and I hope to see you soon.
All right. God bless you.
God bless you.
That sounds great. And when Keith says, hope to see you soon, he means it, and that means that he'll be coming to visit us at Denver Bible Church within the next few weeks, most likely. So that's encouraging, and I hope it encourages you, one, to find out what pro-lifers are doing around the country. That's in Wichita yesterday. Ken Scott's wife, Joe Scott, and Leslie Hanks were here in the studio telling us about their effort to save the baby and the mother of that girl, Karen, at Denver's Planned Parenthood, and efforts going around all around the country. So if you can be involved in your community, if there's an abortion clinic within a half hour, an hour's drive, or a Planned Parenthood satellite clinic that refers, if you have high schools or a college near you, then that's normally where the abortion clinics are operating out of, near schools and minority neighborhoods. That's where Planned Parenthood puts a significant percentage of their clinics, in minority neighborhoods and near high schools and colleges. So you could go. You could get involved. You could call us here, and we'll put you in touch with Ken and Joe Scott or Colorado Right to Life and let you know how to get started. Or you could help out a pro-life group financially and pray for them. Hey, we're out of time. This is Bob and Yurt Live, and please, you're invited. Check out KGOV.com.